Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Tim, we're good to go when you are.
Cue the music.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into dear Lovejoy.
Welcome to the award-winning Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Quokka, spelt Quokka, pronounced Quokka. 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. This is a mailbag special. During this podcast, I'll be giving advice, but let me remind you that I've not been trained at medicine, psychology, finance, or pretty much anything. So if you are taking advice off me, please never, ever, ever forget you are taking advice off a TV presenter, which we all know is a
Terrible idea.
Mark is here to keep me in check. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Tim?
I'm very well. We've got a guest coming in later. We have no idea what time. We've got a rough idea what time he's coming, but we might have to stop this podcast halfway through to speak to him. It's Fraser Doherty, the guy who invented Beer 52. He's also the guy behind Super Jam.
Which I looked up this morning, and I didn't realise it. It's the only jam that they don't add any sugar to, and they sweeten it with natural sugars. It's amazing.
He's an amazing guy. I've known him for quite a few years now, and he's really interesting. He did that when he was a kid. I will find out all about it in a minute when he comes in. But yeah, he's got some exceptional ideas on life and also business. We also went to a wedding recently together, didn't we?
We did. It was lovely, and it was a central London wedding, which I love.
Our friend Chris got married. I really enjoyed it. I thought what was great about it is he had this wedding in this venue, which was he actually had the wedding in the venue. Then he had a sit-down meal with just close friends and family, a small sort of affair. Then in the night time, it was during the week, the wedding, he just opened up the upstairs and there was just a huge party.
And he let us all off riff-raff in.
Yeah, it was such a great idea for a wedding.
It was great.
It seemed to be on a, you know, I don't know anything about finances to weddings, but it seemed to be on a good budget that everyone seemed to be having fun and everyone enjoyed it. And we got to eat some Polish sweets, which I liked.
Yes. I took some Polish cherry vodka as a present.
You did, indeed, yeah. At the wedding, I met a couple of people, fascinating people. One was a forensic pathologist, and I think he was trying to get away from me at the end because I just didn't stop. And what about this? And what about that?
I can't imagine that.
What about this? What about that? I loved it. He said that everyone has it in them to be able to kill. Homicide, that is, not murder, but everyone has it in them to actually do that, which I found fascinating.
I suppose if your children were involved, I expect that would come in, or a close member of your family.
Or you're cornered, or
I thought you'd say, or your cat.
No, you're cornered. He also said it's not like CSI. I said, how useful are you in court? He goes, well, we can say how it's done but we can't say who's done it.
Who's done it, right, so
you need the police to do that. The other person I met was a woman, and I said to her, what's your job? She goes, I'm in charge of noisy air. That's what our kids call it. And she basically looks at noise pollution.
Right.
And so she goes around her area, and I think she has a meter to read the noise pollution. And then when people complain, I didn't realize that's such a big issue. It should be in my house because everyone's doing so many. I feel like I'm living on a building site for the last two summers. That's all it's been around here is people building their houses. But I said to her, what's the major problem? And she said, bass lines of music. And I thought, that's really fascinating. It's not the drums. You'd just assume it was the drums, wouldn't you? But it's the boom, 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 boom. It's the bass, which just drives people nuts. And they go mental and phone them up and say, can you come and do that?
They very rarely do anything about it, though. Because I've had parties around near where I used to live. And you phone up and they say, well, we can't do anything until the office is open on Monday. And you think, well, that's when the party's over.
I think what they've got to do is, if it's a one-off party, tough luck. I mean, if it's constant, I think that's when they go and do something.
Right.
But still then it's tough to do because it is, at the end of the day, just noisy air. And it's like, it's not going to kill you, is it? It's just annoying. I don't know if anyone knows any more about noisy air. Let us know. Got so many letters and tweets and contacts through Instagram and everything else that I'm just going to have to batter through them until Fraser comes and see. I haven't really...
You haven't really organised this. No. It's all right.
No, I organised the first three because they're all about the same subject. So
and then
I thought,
it's just a pile.
And then it's just a pile. So we'll just have to get through them.
Sounds good.
But we've got so much stuff, I just thought we'd just start reading through them. Right, this one comes from Sam. Dear Tim, just started listening to your podcast thanks to Giles Brandreth's recent tweet. What a great episode that was. Yeah, Giles was great. Just wanted to write and say how much I'm enjoying going back through the earlier episodes. Your conversation with Johnny Vegas was fantastic. It was actually a conversation with Michael, wasn't it? The real Johnny Vegas.
Yes.
That's why people liked it. But the episode that was so well timed for me was the one on CBD oil. I just started looking into it to deal with regular terrible pain. So it was so helpful to hear your balanced look on the product. I look forward to hearing your updates on how you're getting on with it. Mine is in the post. Finally, you said you didn't want to come across as an advertisement, so I wanted to tell you it didn't. Oh, good. I'll talk about that in a minute because I've got another couple on that. Dear Tim, really enjoyed this from Rita. Really enjoyed your podcast. It was fascinating. I intend to listen to the cannabis oil talk. That'll be interesting to hear about the latest research. Maybe it'll help me with my cerebral palsy symptoms. Rita, I'd love to know if it does. I think it's important that we sort of, you know, I feel like we share
this information with each other.
Well, I feel like we're a bit of a community. So anyone who's doing it or anyone who has done it or after listening to the podcast, can you let us know what you think about it? Because I think it's important that we gauge everybody, what's happening with everybody here and everybody's different symptoms they're trying to.
Because also you'll find with the sort of mainstream like news outputs, and understandably, I suppose some they can't really say, you know, cannabis oil helps with cerebral palsy or, you know.
Yeah, it's tough to do that.
They can't do that, can they? So
no.
So, but anecdotal evidence will connect, may help some people.
Nick says, "Hi Tim, just listened to your podcast with Hayley Milbank about CBD oil, which I enjoyed. Didn't think I was trying to be sold, so mission accomplished. I was just wondering how you're getting on with the CBD oil, if indeed you still are. Was thinking of getting some for my wife. It's quite an investment. The problem with it, if people keep on talking about being an advertisement, was when I was on the podcast, I was really worried that I was just promoting a product and I was trying to say, no, I'm fascinated by this. I want to do it. This is how I feel about it. But please don't just go and buy it because I'm saying what I think about it. Anyway, it's worked for me. I take so little of it now. I just top up. That's how I feel about it. It mellowed me out. The sleep thing was the big change for me. I've now got myself into a sleep pattern that I used to have when I was a child, which is I put my head on the pillow, I go to sleep. If I do have to get up in the middle of the night and go to the toilet, I put my head back on the pillow and I go to sleep.
Then you wake up at 6:30 for cartoons.
Yeah, I wake up 6:30 for cartoons and have Cocoa Pops. No, my mum never let us have stuff like that. But no, so it was, for me, it's worked. How much is it a placebo? I'm not sure. It might be a placebo because the taste is something else, and so you're really aware that you're taking it. So it's not like taking a pill, and not like I take that turmeric stuff sometimes, and you have no idea what's going on unless you have a little bit of a burp. You can taste a bit of turmeric, but you don't know what it's doing to your body. Whereas this, because the taste, because you do the drops in your mouth, you can actually taste it.
Yeah.
Maybe the placebo of I've got this thing going, so it's working. I just really don't know. Is it strong? For me, I find it strong, but as Mark will let you know, I'm a complete lightweight with any drugs, so...
Don't make that sound like I'm some sort of...
Well, you've got a stronger constitution than me, haven't you? But Mark doesn't get on well with it.
No,
He's not enjoyed it, so this is why it's good that we get to gauge all the opinions. I'm a real big fan, and Mark isn't.
No, I gave up after a couple of weeks. I found the taste too much, actually.
Right.
And I also found I was sleeping too late in the morning. It was knocking me out a lot. So I sort of reduced the dose a bit and I still found it wasn't working for me. So I gave it up. So there
okay.
we go.
Okay. So look, let us know if you've started taking it or if you took it before the podcast, let us know. Deal after a podcast@gmail.com. Lisa says, "Hello TV Tim and podcast Mark." Oh, you're podcast Mark. "This is my first ever time of emailing a podcast, but I have to say I stumbled upon one of the podcasts and rather liked it. So when I'm in, I'm all in. So started listening from podcast one, even including the interesting episode one. What's that mean?
That's actually interesting, as in, you know, finger quotes, interesting episode, right. As in it wasn't very good.
Okay, all right. Yeah, it wasn't great. And episode 15B and 16B, the sleep cast extras. They were Nodcasts, weren't they?
Yeah.
That's what they were. I forgot about those. They're great. We've just read out
cricketers.
Yeah, we read out cricketers' names, didn't we? And what was the other one we did? Numbers or something? I can't remember.
I think so.
I can't remember.
It was a long time ago.
It's taken me 3 dedicated weeks to get to podcast 68, February 2018. So I've 18 months of podcasts to catch up on. Love these podcasts. Motivational speakers, self-help gurus, reading their books, life hacks, and the meaning of life. You both need a knighthood. Not sure how I feel about knighthoods. I hope the remaining 69 podcasts are as good as the first 68. Lisa from Layhill. I hope the Coca-Cola man got a good home for his dad's collection. Well, thank you so much for that email. The thing about the Coca-Cola man,
just quickly recap.
All right, so the guy's dad died and his dad had collected Coca-Cola memorabilia, basically merchandise.
Yes,
so he had all the cans from out history.
There's a whole room.
He had all the foreign ones as well, and then he had like a Coca-Cola car, like half a car, which is a vending machine or something. He had all these things. It was amazing, and he had dedicated it in this room. And when he died, his son didn't know what to do with it, and he didn't want to get rid of it because it was sort of his dad's legacy. It still gives me a funny feeling, actually, thinking about it, because it was a real turning point for me, because it's so extreme that someone who was contacting us actually had a collection like that. It really made me realise that how collections are so horrible. Oh, it makes you shiver. Why would you want to? So we suggested try and give it back to Coke and everything, and that's what he tried to do, and it was great. But you're sort of giving someone this legacy do you want it? No, because you've now got to look after it. Yeah. And all I can think of is about dusting it and stuff. I'm funny about dust getting everywhere and all that sort of stuff. Just weird. So the idea of a collection became very hard in my mind, the thought of that. And then on Sunday brunch, we kept asking the guests for their collections, and just collect such random things. And it's like, what is the purpose of the collection? What are you actually getting out of it? And this is, I think it's something that we all think would be a great idea, but the reality is just get rid of stuff. The older you get, when you're young, start collecting stuff, right? That's what you have to do. And you have to collect all that, collect ambitions and collect friends and collect material objects and stuff like that. And you get to a certain age and then you go, right, get rid of friends, get rid of ambitions, get rid of stuff and just enjoy your life. Stop, And
by the end, you even lose your memory.
By the end, you kind of want to be if you win, you start with nothing. When you end, you just have, you have a couple of people who love you, your mum and dad and your family. At the end, that's what you want. You want to find someone to love and then carry on loving them throughout the whole of your life. And then at the end, there's just you left there with that person. You're loving them and hopefully your kids and your family and stuff like that. And you haven't got this like huge collection of teapots somewhere. Ali says, "Dear Lovejoy and Mark, I'm a big fan of the podcast and I've been listening since day one. I like there's more specials now, although I do miss TV Tim's Buddhist proverbs." Oh, I forgot about that. As the Buddhist said, get rid of your fucking collections. That was a famous Buddhist proverb. Actually, they do. The Buddhist way is to... one of the greatest things when I was going through my dark times, and I still have them, but when I was going through a really dark time, I spent a lot of time reading about Buddhism, and one of the wonderful things about it is getting rid of the attachments. It's a real lesson to be learned, and that means attaching, as I just repeated there, collection stuff that you think is so valuable you don't want to lose, get rid of that. Just sell it, get the value for you. If something's more valuable, if you don't want to lose something, it owns you, you don't own it. And also get rid of attachments to bad people as well. And that, Mark hates this bit, but that can be family as well.
I think we went too far with our Buddhist lifestyle though on this podcast, because we've both now got Buddhist haircuts.
Yeah, I was thinking about growing mine back.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Exactly. Maybe I should go for the showbiz.
I can't go through that again.
Go for the showbiz.
Transplant.
Transplanting it. So my mate Dave, who's very, very cool, he used to have a shaved head. He's not got a lot of hair at the moment, but he's grown it all and he's slicked it all back over his bald patch. And he looks really cool. It doesn't look stupid. It sounds terrible. It doesn't look. And he dresses really well. And he's a very, very cool guy. He just said to me one day, "You know, you shave your own hair, Tim." And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "I can I just be honest with you? Why don't you just, well, this was months ago, by the way, he goes, why don't you just get it done properly by a barber's and so it just looks neater on you? And it's stuck away in my mind for such a long time.
There's nothing a barber could do to my hair now, though. Look.
You've just gone totally bored. You look great like that. But I don't know. I worry about being totally bored alongside Simon Rimmer, because then we're just...
Grow the beard.
We're pretty bored. He's got a beard, hasn't he?
Has he?
I think so. I don't know. He's like, he looks a bit like what you've got, bored and a beard. These are the problems, isn't it, men have? So I've booked an appointment. So I found a barber's who, and this is going to shock you, Mark, this is real TV Tim stuff, right? This is TV money.
If you think that it's TV Tim stuff, it's going to be...
TV,
going to be total TV Tim.
Oh, unbelievable. So how much is getting your hair cut in a barber's?
Well, I mean, so I don't spend any money.
Yeah, how much was it?
No, right. And then that's like the one end of the scale. Yeah. Then you can get it done for a fiver at a barber's. You can get it done for
fiver?
Ten. Yeah, yeah.
Where?
Yeah. Near me, you can, yeah. And then up to, you can maybe go to the Tony and Guy. They'll probably do it for 20, 25 quid maybe.
Right, okay. So that's a hairdresser. So when I used to get my hair cut in a hairdresser's, it was like 40 something quid or something like that. Then
and then
I went back to barber's and I started, because I was just a shit, and it's 12 quid. But the problem with the barber's is you go in the barber's and you queue.
I'm
on TV.
You shouldn't have to queue behind people like me.
Do they not understand?
Who aren't on TV. I actually worry sometimes whether you should even mix with people on TV, because you might catch stuff and then spread it around the TV industry. And they are the most important people in the world, and you don't want to spread stuff.
Do you not know how important celebrities are? What I don't think people realise is how hard we've worked to be on TV. And so they expect us to queue with normal people.
I know.
However.
I'm wondering whether we should start an appeal.
However, well, interestingly, so there's a branch of the barbers who have opened up and they're saying appointment only, right? So I went in there the other day because there was no queue and I went, I want a haircut. This is pretty cool. And then the guy went, do you know it's appointment only and the minimum haircut is £25, Mark. So TV Tim thinks he's going to...
spend 25 quid on getting his head shaved that he can do for, which I do, for 0 pence at
which
home.
Which I do for myself constantly for nothing. But I'm going to give it a go.
I think you should go shorter.
I'm going to give it a go. Yeah, but if I go shorter, I might as well do it myself. I'm just thinking I'm going to get a little fade going. Just a fade. Anyway.
You can do that at home, though.
How can you fade yourself?
I used to do it when I had hair.
How?
So
with the attachment?
Yeah, you do all over in one. Yeah. And then you go, and so say you go all over in four, and then you go up to where you want to in three, and then you go up a little bit lower in two, and then you go a little bit lower in one.
Yeah, but the good barbers go through the grade, and so they go and...
With the attachments, they're different grades.
Yeah, but you don't do it in lines.
No, but you do it. I used to do it all the time.
Yeah, but we used to laugh at your hair. I remember you can't see very well and you have to take your glasses off to get around your ears. Right, dear Lovejoy and Mark, I'm a big fan of the podcast and have been listening since day one. I like that there's more specials. I've done this bit and I do miss TV Tim's Buddhist Proverbs. I'm a bit behind on the mailbag episode, so I don't know if you saw this life hack doing the rounds. Oh, I love a life hack on social media, Racy. Ignore this bit if you have, but it's one I've used for years. Take a 4-gang extension lead on holiday with one travel adapter for the plug, and you've got 4 UK sockets to use abroad. I use this to set up an overnight charging station for the family's mobile phones, iPads, etc.
Very good.
As you can normally set this up in a living area, it keeps the bedroom sockets free for things like a plug-in mosquito repellents that you always end up buying. Do you like that idea?
I like that a lot.
Ooh, yeah, don't take too much stuff on holiday. I think, you know, I read a thing the other day which I quite liked is a woman started traveling and not taking pictures. I think she bought herself a disposable camera.
Okay, I went on holiday recently to Finland.
Oh.
And I took one picture while I was there. And do you know what that was off?
What?
That was off... I thought it was a great idea and I wanted to text it to my brothers. There was a loo roll. And when you get to the end of the loo roll, the little tube at the end is flushable. So you just flush it down the toilet.
Right.
I took a picture of an empty bog roll. That's okay. The only picture I took in Finland.
I like those sort of inventions. They're good.
It's really clever.
I was looking at my milk this morning thinking, why has my milk come in plastic containers after the Lisbon?
Yeah.
We used to have it, like, it was the perfect sustainable and environmentally friendly thing. Glass bottles used to come, meant the milkman could come, meant if you're an old person and you'd fallen down, your milk was left on the step. There were so many good things to the milkman. Yeah. And then it was in cartons for a long time, cardboard cartons. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And now it's in these plastic things. Yeah. Do you think it's going to go back? Do you think
The only thing I wonder whether, you know, they had to wash hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of bottles every day at the water. Whether that would
was worse.
Yeah, I don't know.
The environment.
I don't know.
But I was thinking the milkman could come back, and the milkman used to sell bread and eggs and stuff. Wouldn't that be brilliant now if you could just leave a note and say, "Can you leave me some?"
Yeah,
stuff?
If you were out the night before and you think
bacon,
eggs, bacon.
Yeah, but also the
tea bags,
all the
coffee,
Ocado people, and all that lot, Waitrose, Ocado. I've never done that service, so I can't be bothered. Doesn't feel like it's any use to me. But if it was, I got up in the morning and it was there outside my door, some bread, some eggs, I think yogurts, that's what they used to sell, ski yogurts, didn't they? Oh, look, it's like a comedy routine. Hey, do you remember? Do you remember when we had ski yogurts? Right. Also mentioned the ice. So that's good. That's one of the things. And he said, also you mentioned the ice. I say this is a he. Yeah, it is. Oh, no, Ali.
Doesn't matter.
I think it could be a lady. Also, you mentioned you like the idea of having a uniform to wear, but just don't want one look. Provided you're a normal person and have a collection of clothes that just go together naturally, this works a treat. What you do is you group the clothes of the same type together. If you can hang clothes up, it's easier to manage, and you end up with something similar to this in your wardrobe. Polo shirts, t-shirts, sweaters, shirts, formal work shirts, jeans, trousers, suits. Now you just decide the type of clothes you want to wear, e.g. t-shirts and jeans, or you need to wear, e.g. work shirt and suit, then pick out whatever's on the end of the relevant sections. No decision to be made, just accept what comes out. I couldn't do that. It's a brilliant idea, but I couldn't do that. And then he said, always choose the from the one end. And then when you do your laundry, you just hang it up from the other end. It's a brilliant idea. But
for years, I used to...
I couldn't do it.
For years, because I'd heard that Einstein thing.
What's that?
You know, he only had one type of clothing in his wardrobe.
So did American Psycho.
Yeah. And I did that for about 5 years. I only wore...
So does Thingy. Zuckerberg.
I wore...
Jobs.
Jeans, you know, blue, same type of jean, and a black polo shirt.
Yeah. There's this guy I used to see when I worked in a...
And desert boots.
Yeah, a guy when I worked in a cafe used to wear black jeans, black t-shirt, desert boots. Same every single day. Yeah. I used to see he had a cool haircut as well, and he looked great. And I always thought, that just outfit goes for everywhere. Yeah. Did I tell you I went out with a woman once for a while, and she just had two outfits? She had the black dress and biker boots, and then she had a white t-shirt, sort of a plaid furry jacket thing, and jeans and trainers. And then two outfits, but she had a few white t-shirts, and obviously. And she said, "Oh, these two outfits, just they're my look, and they just, I change one of my looks every now and then, but this is my look at the moment." This was years ago, and she said, "These outfits can do every single occasion out there." Now, obviously, if you turn up to
a wedding
now in biker boots, actually, I think be all right. But in that day, that time, it was all right because biker boots were so cool.
I honestly think the way this country has gone down the pan, I think you could wear anything to a wedding these days and it would be fine.
Gone down to the pan because of standards.
Yes.
Are you like my mum? People aren't dressing up to go to the theatre anymore, Tim.
Don't you think
they're wearing jeans and trainers?
No, but don't you think fashion now is literally find two things that absolutely don't go together and wear them?
Maybe. Oh, no. I think I still like a bit of fashion, but I do miss the days that my granddad used to come around in their hats.
And a suit.
I used to always jacket.
Suit and tie.
And I used to always think, why do they wear a hat every day? They got a hat on. But yeah, I don't like a hat. A, I don't suit a hat, and B, they're uncomfortable. Greg says, was going to send you a genuine problem. However, the latest episode, I was listening to both yourself and Tim. Hold on. I'm going to send you a genuine problem. However, the latest episode, I was listening to both yourself and Tim confess to have... So he's written this to you.
Yeah, so I'm going to get emails sometimes, Tim.
Not happy about this.
Oh, you're not going to read it? You're going to screw it up?
Yeah, sod you, Greg.
Yes.
We're going to send you Genuine Problem. However, the latest episode, I was listening to both yourself and Tim confess to having not seen The Wire, so it appears you both have bigger problems than me. Do yourself a favour and get it watched. So that's what he said.
He thinks because we haven't seen The Wire, our judgment is...
Why didn't you see The Wire?
I just didn't see it. I just think it was not on during the sort of Netflix apocalypse that happened when I started just binging.
It's just funny, isn't it?
Because I never started binging stuff until I was given the Sopranos box set, and then it was...
Yeah, and stuff happens, doesn't it?
This was about 7 or 8 years after that was big. You know,
Breaking Bad was it for me. That's what started me.
Netflix came along very soon after that.
Well, I didn't watch any box sets or dramas up until Breaking Bad because I couldn't be bothered. Because it was like you had to get a thing out of a box and stick it in and stuff. And I couldn't.
You were too busy because you're on TV.
Isn't there someone who can do this for me?
Well, I know. You have to spend 6 days thinking about doing it.
Do you know how hard I've worked to get to where I am?
You've got that 6 days in between each work day where.
And how important people in the limelight are.
Yeah.
And how important their problems are.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's great things in life that you miss because, for instance, say Friends, for instance, right? Which I know you're a fan of, and I'm not a fan of because it's just the same joke done 300 times or whatever. But you know, I get the fact that it's good writing and it had its place. But I never watched it because I think it was on a Friday night, wasn't it?
9 o'clock on a Friday, Channel 4.
So yeah. I was at the age where I was and you're not going to video it, are you? Because that and so just missed it nowadays because it's on demand.
Even with the introduction of Video Plus.
Was that a number or something?
You just typed it. It had a Video Plus number next to the program.
Oh, do you remember?
Just done it again.
Anyway, what have you watched on Netflix recently or Amazon Prime? Oh, I watched something. I watched The Boys on Amazon Prime. Did you see that? That was their big thing.
No.
It was superheroes that had gone wrong.
Don't have Amazon Prime.
Oh, it was hard. I just think. Am I wrong to think that the standard of Breaking Bad
has ruined everything? Sopranos and Breaking Bad has ruined everything.
I've not watched Sopranos, but I know they're good because you've told me I know it. And it's just nothing's quite as good as that. So The Boys, it's all right, but it's all right, but it's not quite as good. I'd still watch it, but it's not quite as good. But I'm still trying to do my Netflix detox. So I'm trying not to watch as much. So
your Netflix detox involves you watching stuff on Amazon Prime?
Well, it's true. It's not Netflix. No, I'm sort of rationing
that
myself.
That is lame.
I am lame, but I'm rationing myself because I don't want the strictest boundaries on it. I'm detoxing, but
you have the odd shot of heroin.
Yeah, I had the odd shot of Netflix. Have you watched anything recently?
Only Mindhunter series, season two, which was superb. You saw season one, didn't you?
Saw season one, watched, I think, the first three of season two, and I don't want to do any spoilers or anything like that, but I found it so disturbing.
Yeah, it's pretty grim.
So I was like, do you know what? I don't need this crap in my life. I mean, it's good, but self-censorship's important. And I started thinking...
Was it giving you ideas?
No, I'm not going to tell you, but the whoever wrote it, suddenly there's a real... twisted bit in it, and I was like, I don't need that crap in my mind. It's horrible. And it was just so I turned it off and I thought, nah, not watching that again. I'll put some comedy on instead. And it's funny because I've only just really, I don't want to have that twisted crap in my head. And it was, there's a line in it, there's a story. I don't know I'll ask you after the podcast actually what happens, but it gets quite twisted.
There's a couple of things coming up on Netflix which you will definitely have to see.
Which is
El Camino, which is the Breaking Bad movie.
Oh, yes.
The tape. Oh,
I think that could be Fraser.
Oh,
let's pause the podcast there. All right. Fraser, welcome to my kitchen. Thank you so much for joining me today. Co-founder of Beer 52. We love it on this podcast. How long have you been doing it for?
Yeah, we started about 6 years ago. So my business partner, James, originally had the idea for Beer 52. And since then, we've kind of traveled all around the world, tasted different beers from a new country every month. And really appreciate all the help you've given us promoting it to your listeners. And
So I remember talking to you about it quite a long time ago. And how long has it taken to get it established, do you think?
I think it took the first few years just to kind of figure out what we were doing, get the business to work, like build a great team. And then the past few years, it's just doubled and doubled every year. And, you know, now we're up to something like 60,000 subscribers.
Wow.
In our club. So, and for our members, it's kind of like their hobby. You know, they love getting a box every month, and inside it's got a set of different beers. You know, we've literally tried beers from all around the world, and it's not just about tasting beer, it's also about learning about other cultures and other countries. So we've got a magazine in there that kind of tells the stories of the travels we've done to find the beers, and yeah, we've really enjoyed, I guess, like exploring the world through.
So what was what was the original concept behind it? Was it the idea that people wanted beers from all around the world, or was it the idea that people like tasting different beers? What was the concept?
Yeah, originally James had been on like a road trip with his dad, and they've got an old motorbike, and they went around Europe and visited lots of breweries, and James kind of fell in love with craft beer and came back to Scotland, and he said, look, I've got this idea, why don't we start a beer club, and every month we'll go and visit a new country, find some new beers, and send them out to our members. So we'd kind of seen craft beer exploding, like especially in Scotland, there'd been like Brewdog and other kind of success stories. And, you know, we just figured that craft beer was an exciting thing to get involved with.
Yeah, see, the thing Mark and I love about it is when it arrives is we like tasting it. I've got to sound like the bad ones as well, because there's no such thing as a bad beer. There's just beers you like and beers you don't like, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of the way it is. But when I taste one, I'm going, I just don't like that. And Mark goes, I love that.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about it.
Absolutely.
Because it's nice that you get all these different varieties and flavours. By the way, generally, I like most of the beers. But every now and then, there'll be one with a really unusual taste. I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I can get my head around that one.
Yeah.
So what you try and do, I assume, is you try and find interesting, as many interesting beers as you possibly can.
Exactly. Yeah, most people's experience with beer is based around lager, like some people have maybe tried an IPA, but there's actually hundreds and hundreds of different styles of beer out there, and lots of different traditions behind beer in different countries. So you might not love all the styles, but at least you can learn what they are and develop your palate, and, you know, you kind of go on a journey of learning about beer, and the more you learn, the more you enjoy it.
So when you put the package together, it's eight, isn't it?
Two, right.
A week for a month.
Yeah.
When you put them together, is there a science behind it? Are you looking for a lighter beer and a more complex one? Is that how you're working?
Yeah, we do try to have a variety of different styles in the box. So we get samples literally every day from all around the world, and we have a beer buyer, and he has to taste all the samples and pick the best ones.
If you're ever looking for some, Mark would like that job. If you're ever struggling, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'm amazed that we have to also pay him a salary. we could. I always think we could get someone to do that for free, but
yeah,
we go through a lot of different samples, try, you know, find the best ones, and try and make it a varied selection each time.
What problem comes with 60,000 subscribers?
Well, I guess like we have members who've got a whole range of different palates. So some people are very new to craft beer, some of them have been tasting beers with us all along these years. So we always have to be conscious that when we put a selection together, it's got something for everyone in there. We also have to find breweries that can make enough beer to supply us. So, you know, some breweries are just a couple of people, you know, starting out really small scale, and they might struggle to make enough beer for us. But with enough planning and, you know, cooperation, we can work with some pretty small breweries.
But they say the customer's always right, but the customer's always miserable, aren't they? They're like, I'm sure out of 60,000, there's got to be a small percentage of them who are just moaning away. Does that become a problem for you?
I think for any business, you've got to figure out, like, what is it that you stand for? Like, what is it that you're offering? And, you know, whatever you're doing, people will come and say, well, why don't you do it this way? And, oh, I'm going to cancel because you don't do this. But, you know, you've got to figure out who is it you're trying to please, and accept that you're not going to come up with something that pleases everyone. Some people might not like the idea of a beer club, but we're focused on the people who do, and like creating the best possible beer club for them.
Well, you know about business, don't you, because you set up Super Jam.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got your book sitting here because I've read your book. It's brilliant. It's called Super Business. You do talks on how to for businesses,
exactly
how to run a business, or what is it, motivational?
All I do really is share my story and like the ups and downs and things that have happened along the way and some of the advice that other people have given to me. And I guess my story is quite simple. It's maybe quite relatable, and I know there's a lot of people out there who have an idea for a business, and you know, hopefully just by reading my story and the story of other entrepreneurs, it can kind of give people like encouragement and maybe some tips to, you know, get something started themselves.
So 2003, September 2003, you were age 14.
Yeah, that's right.
And you thought, you're in your gran's kitchen looking at her recipes for jam, and you thought, I'm going to make this into a business.
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea that that would go on to, you know, change my life, but started making it in the kitchen at home and selling it in the neighborhood and farmers markets and to little shops. And I was literally knocking on doors and, you know, selling it door to door. And it gradually grew and grew and got to the point, you know, I decided to leave school and make jam every day. And I was soon, you know, my parents couldn't cook the dinner in the kitchen anymore. I was cooking jam so much. And, you know, I realized I would need to move into a factory. So, you know, spent a bit of time figuring out how to do that. Got labels designed. And then it was my big dream to try and sell my product to a supermarket. So I convinced my dad to drive me to Waitrose, and he waited in the car outside.
How old were you at this stage? 15,
16? 16 or 16, so, yeah. And borrowed my dad's suit.
Brilliant.
Probably two sizes too big for me. And then I pitched my idea to the senior jam buyer of Waitrose. And he said it was a great idea to make jam 100% from fruit, but...
Can I just tell you, did your gran always make it 100% from fruit, or was it your idea? Oh, there's someone else at the door. Who could that be? It might be Cooker. We'll just pause there whilst we see who that is. Sorry.
That's all right. It could well be Beer 52 delivery.
Oh, it's the Beer 52 delivery. Oh, my God. What
are the
chances
of
that? Timing. Literally is. Look how excited Mark is. Oh, that's great. Bring it in and we'll crack one open in a minute. Okay,
nice.
That's fantastic. Your gran's, was it always made out of fruit juice, or?
Well, originally my gran used sugar in the traditional way. And then when I was selling jam at farmers markets, you know, people were always saying to me, look, I don't really buy very much jam. It's got so much sugar in it. So I got me thinking, like, maybe I could come up with a different way of making jam. So came up with a way of making it 100% from fruit and fruit juice. And, you know, I figured that this was an idea worth pitching to the supermarket. So,
right.
You know, I got the chance to, you know, share them my idea, and you know, they said it was a good idea, but I would need to set up production in a factory and get labels designed. And you know, they said, sorry, but it's a no for the moment, but if you can do those things, you're welcome to come back. And
do you think they were just getting rid of you?
I think they probably never imagined they would see me again, but you know, sure enough, a year later I'd convinced the factory to work with me, and I got labels designed, and I thought there was a link between Super Jam and Superman, so I was going to be like a comic book character, Jam Boy, and I had these kind of comic book labels, and, you know, Waitrose explained that that wasn't really how it worked. You know, packaging is not supposed to make people laugh. It's supposed to explain why they should buy your product. So they said, sorry, it's, you know, it's a no. So then kind of went back to the drawing board and came up with some labels that worked, and eventually they said, okay, we'll give it a shot in the shops and, you know, see how it sells. And from there it kind of, you know, went on to sell millions of jars, and we launched in, you know, many more stores, and started to sell in other countries.
What country is
the country that we had the most success in? Was South Korea. So I got an email one day from someone there, and they said, I've read about your story and I'd love to try and sell your product here in Korea. So I said, sure, you know, I don't know anything about Korea, but let's give it a shot. Sent them a few jars. They email a few weeks later and say, okay, we need to place an order for 20,000 jars.
Wow.
So I said, you know, wow, I better go to Korea. So went there, and, got the opportunity to meet this lady, and her name is Che Yura, and she's kind of like the Oprah Winfrey of South Korea. And she said, look, I love your story. I'd love you to come on my home TV shopping show, but we've got to do it in Korean. And
amazing.
So I spent a couple months practicing and, you know, memorizing a few key sentences about Jam in Korean. And I get to the recording of the show, and, you know, it's kind of live recording. And I said, look, I can't really speak Korean, but I know these sentences. And if you ask me these five questions in this order, it will look like we're having a conversation. So, okay, sure, I'll ask you those five questions. And cameras are rolling, and I think she does ask me the five questions, but just not in the right order. So, you know, she says, where are you from? And I say, well, my grandmother grew up on a farm in Ireland. So kind of get away with it, and somehow it works. And yeah, it goes on to, you know, become pretty popular in Korea. So I got the chance to go there quite a few times and, you know, learn more about South Korea. And yeah, it's been a, you know, great experience.
What's their favorite flavor over there? What sells the best?
I think the best seller is blueberry and blackcurrant. Right. Blueberries are kind of like a super fruit, and I think that, you know, helps.
And what about over here? What sells here?
Same. Actually. Yeah, so similar taste, but in South Korea, they're maybe more adventurous with what they do with jam. So, you know, they'll put it on all kinds of breads and desserts like we do, but they'll also put it on pizza.
Right. Oh, really?
It's kind of strange to us.
That's cool.
You know, they just do things their own way. And
well, I've come to this conclusion after working on Sunday Brunch for such a long time that every flavor goes with each other because the flavors are irrelevant.
Yeah.
What's relevant is the salt, the sweet, the vinegary taste, the citrus,
sure.
the acidic.
Yeah.
That's what we're craving, or the chili. That's what we're craving. So you can put any old flavors together. It's the bit you want is the excitement,
exactly.
The dancing, the party
yeah.
on your tongue, and that's what you kind of want from it.
Absolutely.
Don't
yeah.
you taste with your nose and... No, don't you? What do you do? Taste with the flavors come from your nose, don't they?
Mm.
And the senses, the salty and stuff comes on your tongue. So
yeah,
that's what you're
yeah.
looking for.
Absolutely.
Maybe. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think they're really up for like mashing different cuisines together. And, you know,
it's happening more and more every Sunday. And they go, yeah, that goes. Yeah, we'll stick that with that. Yeah, that's fine. That goes. Yeah, it all goes. So what's Korea like then? Is a South Korea like as a place?
Well, yeah, South Korea is like the most technologically advanced country. You know, if you imagine Samsung ran a country, which they more or less do,
right,
it's pretty technological and very consumerist and very fast. And, you know, if you're a student or a kid in South Korea, you're under a huge amount of pressure to study. You know, on the day where the kids have their exam, it's like an official day in South Korea, and, you know, you're not allowed to operate heavy machinery on that day.
Oh.
Traffic goes earlier in the morning so that the kids can definitely get to school and there's no rush hour. You're actually not allowed to fly an airplane during the English oral exam in the whole country. So
wow.
They take education very seriously, and it's a very competitive system. So very high achieving kind of place, and yeah, very prosperous and stuff like that. So a lot of maybe preconceptions I had, you know, I didn't really know much about Korea before I went there.
So do you think you were always born to be a businessman?
I think ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to start my own business. I don't know exactly where it came from. I guess like some people think that maybe when I'm going to talk about being an entrepreneur, I'm going to talk about how to get rich and about money. And I think people have maybe a preconception about entrepreneurs. So that's what we're motivated by, what we think about. But, you know, ever since I was a kid, I just loved the idea that I could be in control of my own destiny. You know, I could make a career for myself doing something that I love, you know, that I didn't have to, you know, maybe go and work at a company and rely on them keeping me employed. You know, I could come up with my own ideas and try things out. So I think that's something that always excited me.
Mm. So what is it you love? A happy customer? When you see people like Mark or myself go, oh, this tastes, is that what makes you happy?
Yeah, exactly. I think creating something that people love, and, you know, getting great feedback from people, that you know, the feeling of like having created something and put it in the world that didn't exist before. I mean, we've got a great team who are working with us at Beer 52, and just getting to work with smart, talented people creating something, it's a great feeling.
There is one podcast where the actual, just like today, actually, how it actually arrived during the podcast, and Mark and I just went straight in, opened it, and did it live, tasted the beer live. And the listeners could really tell how excited we were, because it's like a little present comes through every week. It's so lovely. I'm on a chocolate service as well, subscription service as well. And then when that arrives as well, you're like, oh my God, the new chocolate, excellent. And it just gets really exciting, because you never know when it's really going to arrive. I mean, I'm sure you send them out the same time every month, but I don't really know. So why did you decide to call it Super Jam? Just because of the idea of the superhero thing?
Yeah, I think I was about 15 when I came up with the name, and I thought it was a cool name. And, you know, it's kind of super fruit, super jam, something like that. It somehow just stuck. And
what have you learned then about branding and thing? What's the important take home on things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like maybe when I was early on in like business studies at school, they would say every business has to have a unique selling point, you know, like a USP. There has to be something unique about your business. And maybe if you watch Dragons Den, you'll think your business idea needs to have a patent. It needs to be something unique. But actually what I've found is that most things aren't unique. You know, most great products or great businesses are not doing something that's actually unique. But what is unique about them is maybe their story or their company culture or their business model. So those are things to focus on being unique. And, you know, definitely having a story behind my brand and figuring out how to tell that has been a, you know, part of the success. And, you know, people will say, well, that's easy for you to say because you've got this cute story of you and your gran. You know, I didn't start my business with my gran, but there's obviously a story behind every business, behind every brand. There's some reason that you started it. There's some, otherwise, you know, why would you be doing it? So you just got to figure out what your story is and, you know, maybe how to tell it.
Yeah, go with me on this, but whenever you start a sentence like that, you know you're in trouble. But I've always thought in life, during my career, that I need an enemy. I think that's what, you know, that's what makes a good product. Is so when I was on Soccer AM, I chose Ant and Dec because they were by far outrating me on Saturday mornings. And now on Sunday Brunch, I choose This Morning because they win all the awards and not me. And Saturday Kitchen, I think, is your enemy Nutella? Is that... has Nutella made a dent in the marmalade, the jam market?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it is tempting to get fixated on maybe your competitors or like other people who are, you know, but I think I've found it like more healthy to just focus on doing what we're doing, like do it our own way, do the best job of it we can, and, you know, try not to be fixated by what other people are doing. Because, you know, if you look at them, you end up copying what they're doing right. And then they're looking at you and copying what you're doing right. And you end up not being you know, as unique as you could be. So, yeah, try to
How is the jam market, though, over here? Because, you know, when I was a kid, that's what we had. We had toast with jam on it. And butter or jam or marmalade sometimes, something like that. And then the kids these days seem to want chocolate every single step of the day. Well, they want cakes and they want things like that. Is the bread and jam market still alive?
Yeah, jam market has been in decline for maybe like 20 years, something like that. And things like chocolate spread, funnily enough, and peanut butter are, you know, growing. So we have recently started making peanut butter and... yeah, I guess that's like a natural next
step. Oh, you're doing peanut butter?
Yeah.
Do you know what? They're advertising it everywhere on the tube at the moment, like a healthy peanut butter. I didn't realise how huge that had come. Yeah, but with peanut butter, I assume the American model is with jelly, which is jam, right?
Exactly.
So that's, I suppose, how you're going to try and do it, is
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So are you still pretty much, have you got any other businesses going along at the moment, or is it just these two at the moment?
Pretty much focused on this, and most of my energy and time is kind of focused on Beer 52. It's, you know, really exploded over the last couple of years, and we're kind of going through a really exciting
So what's the story behind Beer 52 then, if there's a story, a marketing campaign behind that?
I guess originally it was kind of James's road trip with his dad that kind of created the idea, and then, you know, now I guess our story is that as a club, you know, as a group of 60,000 people, we're traveling around the world to a different country every month. And, you know, we're exploring the world through beer and, you know, not just learning all about beer, which is fascinating, but also uncovering other stories and other cultures around the world.
Do you like beer?
I do, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, like, when, I mean, when we first started, you know, I wasn't a beer expert at all. You know, I was interested in it and, you know, I liked drinking an IPA. But over these past years, you know, we've tasted thousands and thousands of different beers and, you know, become more and more passionate about it.
Yeah, I'm so spoiled in my job because I get to taste so many different things. And I have to say that the beer, it's such a... such a huge variation in taste on beers. Even if you just go for one type, like a lager or a porter or an IPA or something, the variation in the type is huge, which makes it really exciting. Same goes for chocolate, coffee, obviously wine, everybody knows about that, but cheeses and stuff. It's, you know, you shouldn't just stick with one. Try a variety because it becomes very exciting. But the older I get, the more interested I am in beer just because it's so exciting. And I think it's everything from the bottle or the... I mean, a lot of the stuff you're sending out now is in cans.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the breweries are moving to cans. It's better for the beer. You know, it keeps it fresher and, you know, it's more environmentally friendly. You know, it takes half as much shipping to, you know, transport it. And, yeah, it doesn't break in the box. So that's good for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you must have a problem with that, do you? Breakages.
Yeah, occasionally. We've kind of spent a lot of our life in cardboard box factories, you know, figuring out how to make the perfect box. But, yeah, I mean, the cans are great as well because it gives the breweries more space to put their artwork on. And a lot of the designs and illustrations are, you know, fantastic. And, you know, a lot of the breweries collaborate with, you know, great artists to do their packaging. And that's a big part of it. You know, sometimes it's a shame when we get a sample from a brewery and, you know, it tastes great, but, you know, the packaging they've designed or the label they've created, like, isn't up to scratch.
Right.
And, you know, people are, unless it looks great, they might not give it the chance of trying it.
How long does it take to get a business off the ground from scratch?
I think you can start a business pretty quickly. You know, I think in the past it might have taken you a long time, but, you know, now you can start something pretty fast. I did an experiment a few years ago where I tried to create a business in a weekend, and I wrote a little book about that called 48 Hour Startup. And it was basically about how you could go from, like, having a blank piece of paper to coming up with an idea, creating a website, getting a logo designed, and, you know, finding your first customers really quickly. And I guess the idea of it was that a lot of people have an idea for a business, but they just put it off. They say, oh, one day I'll do that, or, you know, once I quit my job, or once I've paid the mortgage, or something like that. But actually, you can start something for not very much money and not very much time, and, you know, just test out your idea. And if you can just get some initial feedback from customers, you know, that might motivate you to go further. Or, you know, if they give you some bad feedback, you might change the idea a bit. But I would say you can test things out pretty quickly.
What are the challenges which comes with a subscription service? Because obviously if you go to Waitrose, your customer walks in the front door or goes to the website, suddenly you're in a different place for the subscription service.
I think there are all kinds of subscription boxes out there, and I think the ones that have worked, and I think the reason that our idea has worked, is that we give you a whole different experience each time, so you don't get bored of it. You know, if you subscribe and after a few boxes it's all the same thing every month, then there's no incentive not to just go to the supermarket. But, you know, what we're doing is, like, every month a completely new experience, completely different.
Yeah, but how do you start by getting the subscribers? How do you get your first ever subscriber?
We're big fans of, like, I guess when we first started we used Groupon actually to get our first ever customers.
Really?
And this was like 6 years ago or something like that, and that was like a big thing at that time. It's kind of died a little bit since then, but that gave us like an initial burst of, you know, 1,000 customers or something like that. And, you know, we soon discovered that it wasn't quite as simple as that you had to, you know, get the packaging right and get the beers right and deliver it on time, otherwise they would cancel, you know, if you didn't get everything right. So over time we've kind of figured out all those things, and, you know, now we do stuff like working with podcasters like yourself. You know, that helps us to, you know, reach an audience of people that are, you know, interested in this type of thing. We also do lots of, like, partnerships, so maybe partnering with craft beer festivals. So, you know, everyone who will come to the beer festival, they'll get a free case of beer to try out our service. And then a big thing for us is that our members invite their friends. So if you get your friend to join, then you get a free case of beer. So those are kind of like the big things for us. And we've tried all kinds of different marketing over the years. But
you don't have to tell me the answer to this, but if you get someone who takes a subscription, what's the staying? I don't know what the word is. What's the term for them staying?
Sure. Yeah, so like our main offer is that you can try it out for free.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people will take the free case and, you know, cancel, and, you know, that's okay. We're happy that they tried it. And then there's a good chunk of people who stay, and, you know, the ones who like it, they'll stay for years and years. So, you know, maybe like 20% of people will still be members after a couple of years, you know, and that's what makes it work as a business for us, is like finding those people who really like it, and, you know, it becomes their hobby and it becomes something that they look forward to every month.
Podcasting's a really interesting thing, isn't it? It's changed the dynamic now, because it's an easier way, or not an easier, but it's an interesting way for you guys to advertise, because you're getting into a sort of slightly different market from the normal advertising on radio or magazines.
Yeah. What we've really liked about it is we've been able to like partner with all kinds of different podcasts over lots of different genres. And I guess the hosts like yourself kind of actually try the product and actually make a recommendation to their listeners about it, which is a really powerful kind of marketing, because, you know, people who are listening can, you know, trust that you're not going to push something unless you actually believe in it.
Yeah.
So that means that it works a lot better than if we, I don't know, bought like a radio advert or something and it was just our ad telling people how great we were. I think personal recommendations are really potent. So for us, that's what makes podcasting work.
Well, yeah, I suppose what's interesting about it as well, because I remember having an early conversation with you about putting on the podcast and thinking, oh, it's beer.
Yeah.
And that weighing up, do I want, because I talk a lot about mental health and hair and things like that. But I think because it's not, hey, have a load of beer and get drunk.
Yeah,
because it's not that at all. It's you're going for the taste of what it tastes like, and I think that's what sold it to me as a thing to do on the podcast. And as I say, Mark and I absolutely love doing the thing where we crack one open and have a taste, which I'm gonna definitely do in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
But tell us a few stories then. First of all, tell us about the I think the first ever batch we did on this podcast was Korea and South Korea.
Right, exactly.
You actually ended up in North Korea.
Yeah, somewhere I never thought I would find myself, to be honest with you. But I'd kind of spent a lot of time in South Korea, made friends with a lot of different craft brewers there, and we got talking about the idea of, you know, putting together a set of Korean beers. And they said, look, if you're going to do an edition about Korea, you're going to miss a big part of the story of our country if you don't also visit North Korea. So we had some reservations about going there. You know, we don't obviously support the government there, and, you know, we know all kinds of bad things that happen there. And but we figured that, like, going there, like, meeting some people and having beers together and trying to learn something couldn't be a bad thing. So we set out to do the first ever brewery tour of North Korea, and we got the chance to visit 6 different breweries. We tried lots of different beers, ranging from pretty much drinkable to pretty much undrinkable. And we met brewers, and, you know, they were as passionate about beer as we were, and, you know, they were fascinated by all the different kinds of beers that we'd brought with us in our suitcase to share with them. And, you know, they'd read about Belgian beers in textbooks, and, you know, we got the chance to try some together. And so that was an amazing experience. In the end, we made a beer where we took one ingredient representing North and one ingredient representing South, and we kind of, I guess it was like a kind of peace beer, and that was a great experience, and members really loved it.
Did they follow you around?
Yeah, so we had like 3 kind of guides who were, you know, watching us, and I think originally we were worried that they would, you know, be kind of spies and they were going to like turn us into the government for some kind of minor crime. But they turned out to be really interesting. Their English was great. Like, they were quite curious about the outside world. They had a lot of great stories from their own lives. And, you know, the lesson we learned was, like, the less we were judgmental about what they were saying or about the government or things like that, the more safe they would feel to share with us pictures of, you know, their own life or, you know, stories of ordinary things there. So we learned a lot from that. And probably the strangest place they took us to was called the Kumsusan Palace of the Sun. And we went there on the bus. They told us, look, you need to wear a suit and a tie. So I had to go and buy a tie. And we arrive there, we're getting off the bus, and we say, look, should we bring our camera? And they said, no, you're not allowed to bring any cameras here. Should we bring our phone? No, you can't bring your phone. Maybe we should bring our wallet in case there's anything for sale. No, like, the only thing you can officially bring is one tissue for your tears. And so, you know, we go inside, and basically this place is where they have the bodies of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il laying in state. And so we're led into this chamber, and we're instructed that we're going to bow three times at the body of Kim Il-sung. And, you know, there are four armed soldiers watching us as we do this. So we kind of did as we were instructed, and felt kind of strange afterwards. But that's kind of part of the part.
How did you feel about them as a as a nation then when you left? And
I mean, I think that we got the chance to meet people there, and you know, we had beers together with the guides, and you know, I guess it teaches you something about the human condition, that like these people are living in a place where they don't have the freedoms that we have. They don't can't express themselves in the ways that we can, and things like that. I mean, there's like fashion police there, you know, who will stop you in the street if you're not dressed smartly enough. And it sounds kind of comical to us, but it shows you how strict, you know, strictly rules are enforced there. And but even in amongst all of that, you know, we met people who were funny and interesting and curious. And, you know, I dare say we kind of made friends. So, and that, you wouldn't expect anything else. I mean, they're people like us, and they're living in a messed up system. But
that we have, in fairness, we have fashion police in religions.
Mm.
True. And also some work organizations, we have ways that we have to dress in certain places. So I suppose that appeal. And also we have, I'm not going to get on my on my soapbox here, but I was brainwashed until four months ago something about prohibition with drugs over here, and so I've ever since a child I've been brainwashed about how they should all be illegal and how all addicts are bad people and stuff like that. And so I've had my government brainwashing at exactly the same time. But the one thing you've said there, which I think is really important, is we're free and we're free to think. You know, as we can see what's going on with Brexit at the moment, we're all, what's funny is we're all such a myriad of opinions going on that we're in a stalemate position. And I think that's good that we're in a country which can hit stalemate rather than just someone going, right, we're doing this and that's all we're doing. What's your take on, as you're doing a pretty much an import business, because most of your beers come from abroad, what's your take on Brexit?
I think, you know, obviously the exchange rate like impacts our business importing stuff. Anything that's going to make it harder to do that isn't going to make our job easy of bringing beers in from Europe and other places. So we are worried about that. We did a set of beers. It was kind of the largest ever pan-European brewing project, a collaboration project. So we took 12 UK brewers and 12 brewers from around Europe, and they each paired up and, you know, made a beer to, I guess, like celebrate cooperation across Europe. And I guess like we wanted to try and like say something positive in all of this. And you know, whatever people's opinions are, I guess hopefully we can continue to like make beers and drink beers with, you know, people all over Europe.
It's important, that, isn't it? When I first met you, you didn't have a house because you didn't think it was worth it, because you spent so much time in a suitcase. You thought, there's no point. Are you still, or do you actually?
No, for a while, I kind of just, I thought it would be fun to like just travel around continuously and crashed on a lot of friends' places. And I guess I do think it's important like to not, I think as a society, we place a lot, I think as a society, we're put under a lot of pressure, you know, to want material things. I think that causes us like unnecessary like stress, and you know, the more stuff you have, the more stuff you have to worry about.
We've just been discussing that on this podcast here, the attachment to things is just, it drives you crazy. Get rid of stuff. Once you get to a certain level, you collect certain things like a chair and a TV or something, and then start getting rid of stuff when you've collected too much.
So I think it's good to sometimes think about what do you actually need, and you know, are the things that you have actually making you happy? And it's almost like the religion of our society is materialism.
But being a businessman, you're judged on how big your yacht is and stuff, aren't you? So, and how big your penthouse flat is. That's how business people judge each other: how big their bank balance is, how much profit they're giving away, and what, you know. You look at what's his name, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett, and that lot. Yeah. They're so proud they're giving all their profits away. I'm sure they're earning a few quid as well. But I mean, you know, it's how are you judging yourself?
Yeah, I think maybe that's changing. Like, I think people don't look at Donald Trump and think that's something I aspire to. You know, they don't think that showing off your wealth and, you know.
Do you think that is changing? I'd like to think it was, but do you really think it is?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, I guess the key is like just figure out what's important to you. And like to some people, maybe that makes them happy. I mean, I'm not sure that it does, but certainly for me, that's not what's important. And I try to, you know, focus on what is.
I feel really guilty now because earlier on in this podcast, I've admitted that I'm going to spend £25 on a haircut. And I'm up there with Trump and Buffett and all that lot, splashing my cash around. TV Tim splashing his 25 quid around. We can't get you on without talking as well about your Super Jam tea parties, because that's been something that you've really enjoyed doing, isn't it?
Yeah. So originally my grandmother, she would visit care homes in the east end of Glasgow where she lived, and you know, she would drag my little brother and I with her at weekends, and like he'd play his guitar and I would kind of tell stories. And you know, I guess my gran like felt strongly about kind of spending time with these older people, so yeah, we thought it would be nice to try and do something like that on a big scale. And maybe 10 years ago we started running completely free tea parties in like community centres and care homes and hospitals, originally just in Scotland, but we now do them all over the UK. We've had some in Korea. We even had one or two in America, although in America we don't call them tea parties. Turns out that means something quite different. So. And yeah, we've had hundreds and hundreds of parties, and all completely run by volunteers. So yeah, if anybody wants to set one up in their community, they can always
go to the website, Super Jam website. So are you selling the jam in America then? Are you calling it Super Jelly, or did you have to?
At one time we tried to launch in America, right, but it proved quite difficult. I have some dreams of, you know, one day they're doing that. So yeah, might figure it out.
Are you happy with your two businesses, or would you rather do more?
I think in my lifetime, I'm sure that I'll, you know, start other things. You know, I love the process of like coming up with an idea and getting something off the ground and, you know, creating something. I'm trying to be as focused as I can on what I'm doing now. Like, I think as an entrepreneur, it can be easy to, you know, go to the pub and get talking about an idea and say, yeah, let's do that tomorrow morning. And, you know, the next day you have another idea and you think, oh, let's do that. And you have to figure out how to like focus on one
thing. So I've got this idea. This morning I was doing milk. I was doing some milk for the thing, and I noticed it came in a plastic thing, and I thought, why don't we get milk and it can be in glass instead, in bottles, and then we could recycle it, and we could have these guys who come to our door every day, and they could travel around in electric vehicles, and they could also have bread and milk and cheese and eggs and yogurts, ski yogurts they could have as well. And they could come around, and also they'd be good for the community, because as they came every day to pick up your milk, and you could leave a little note inside the bottle if you wanted to, if there was an old person or someone who didn't pick up the milk up, it would alert them that their person might be you. And I thought, I don't know. And I was thinking about calling them milk people, milk person, milk human. I was going to go milkman, and I thought, nah, that's so sexist. What do you think? It's a great idea.
I think it's got legs, yeah.
I tell you what, the supermarkets are out there with their Ocado, whatever they're called, everything else, they're all doing it. Why can't we do it? It's an electric vehicle. It's sustainable. It's fantastic. All right, so I'm going to ask you the questions that I ask everybody. Do you get people pitching you ideas, by the way, constantly?
Yeah, it's quite often by email. Yeah, people will just say, what do you think of this idea?
Are you happy to receive them?
Yeah, usually I don't have any idea about what it is they're thinking about. You know, their ideas usually in some completely industry that I don't know anything about. But, you know, I would always just encourage people. You know, I would say, look, if that is your idea, like, don't don't ask me if it's a good idea, just go and try it and see what happens.
I get people write to me and they go, I've got this great idea for a TV show, but I can't tell you what it is in case you steal it. Can you sign an NDA or something like that? And I go, no, because every TV show, like everyone's thinking the same TV show all the time. At the moment, people are obsessed with, well, they're always obsessed with sex and nudity and stuff, so Love Island and Naked Attraction and all these sort of things. It's like, the more naked you make people, the more they'll watch it. No shit. Apparently it works, you know? Someone should just make a TV show on cats, because, like, if you go on the internet, that's what people watch, isn't it? Cats constantly. So, actually, there probably is a program on cats.
That's
naked
cats.
Ew, Mark, really? Well, how are we going to do that? I'm going to ask Fraser the questions, but I'm wondering whether you come and select a beer for us to try whilst you're doing.
I think Fraser should select
one. Okay, well, shall I do the questions? And then I'll do the questions, then Fraser can explain this week's box and tell us how to subscribe. So one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
I think, like, the main message I would give is just to try. You know, I think a lot of people have an idea for a business, or maybe they want to do something in their community, something that's frustrating them. Like, you know, don't sit on it. Just take the action and actually try.
Okay, I've changed the question. I usually ask people, what's the biggest mistake you've made? Have you got one of those? Because otherwise I've got something else to ask you.
I don't have, like, a single biggest mistake. I've definitely made a lot of mistakes along the way. I think something that I would do differently, if I was to look back, you know, in my first business, Superjam, I kind of did that on my own, you know, and I really tried to do everything myself. You know, I tried to design the labels myself, I tried to do the sales myself, you know, and then much later on figured out that I needed to find people who were better than me to come and join. I think
the other thing is, and I think you make this point in your book constantly, I can't remember, it's a long time since I've read it, but A, you're supposed to make mistakes, and B, it's not that easy, is it?
No.
It's like,
you know, going to make mistakes.
Don't beat yourself up if it goes wrong. Yeah. I think you've made that point in your book a lot, where it's like, just keep going.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's supposed to happen. Right. I've added this new question. I'm going to give this a go. What's something you think people should know? It could be anything. I've just sprung that upon you, so you might not know that. Is there anything you think people should know?
I think it's that, you know, people should know that it's okay to fail.
Right.
You know, I think just kind of related to what you're saying, it's like, I think people imagine that if they try doing something and it doesn't work, people are going to laugh at them. Like, people are not going to laugh at you. They're too busy worrying about their own stuff to even notice that you've failed, really.
Right.
You know, you'd be surprised that people don't really mind that you've failed, and they're happy to see that you tried.
Any life hacks?
I think something is, like, we're so distracted by the world around us. Everything's changing so much that I try to just focus on my own things, my own what's important to me, my work, my family. It's not really a hack as such, but I think you've always got to, like, refocus yourself on, you know, not being distracted by, I don't know, something that somebody somewhere said that offended you, or by some of the terrible things happening in the world. Just try and stay focused. So something I try and get better at is not taking my phone around everywhere. You know, it's a simple thing, but you know, if it's the weekend and you go to the pub, you don't need your phone. You know, if you're going to go and visit your granny, you don't need your phone. Just leave it at home, and you'll engage more with what you're doing.
We were discussing this earlier in the podcast. I'm not sure we got that. I think you rang just as the doorbell as I was discussing it. But basically, the idea of going on holiday without taking pictures, so you can actually live the holiday again, rather than trying to look for capturing moments to show everybody else. You're living it just for you.
Absolutely.
And I think some woman had started doing that, and the only camera she took was a disposable one in the end. So she wasn't looking for photo opportunities ever. She was just trying to enjoy it. And that really resonated with me. You want pictures of your kids to remember, but hold on, enjoy it as well and get the most out of it. Can you recommend a book?
On that topic, there's a book called Rules of Simplicity by John Maeder, and it's quite a short book, so I'm not an avid reader, so that suits me, and it's kind of, I guess, like rules for how to keep things simple in life, in business. It's like simplicity is sanity, that sort of thing. So
your book's quite small as well, quite short. It's well worth reading. It's called Super Business, How I Started Superjam from My Gran's Kitchen. But not only it's your story, which is a really great story, but it's also lots of tips and advice there for people starting businesses, isn't it? So it's very good. Finally, what's the meaning of life?
I guess I do think about my own mortality quite often. I think it's healthy to do that. I think about basically, I think this is like a one, I think this is like a single journey trip. You know, I don't believe there's something after. I don't believe I'm coming back. So that to me means that every day is, you know, precious. And I do think I need to try and do as much as I can, see as much as I can, experience as much as possible, travel. But I also think about the fact that, you know, at the end, in the vastness of the universe, like, none of it actually matters. And if it doesn't work out, that's okay. If you miss the train, that doesn't matter. So do as much as you can, try things. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter, but at least try your best.
If you're ever feeling crap, look up. This is my latest thing, and realize how insignificant you are, and then you can just go, do you know what, none of it really matters. Look at this. I mean, look at the vastness of the sky. At nighttime you see the stars, in the day you see the clouds, or the beautiful blue sky. You see the little aeroplanes and the birds. Anyway, let's try some of this. So if you want a free one, case, go to beer52.com/lovejoy this week to get a free one. How much is free? That's postage and packaging on top to pay.
So you pay $5.95 postage and packing.
Okay, so we've got Mark's lined up all the beers here. You get a free snack with it. How do you get your snacks?
So they basically are usually like little startup snack companies, and we have a lot of fun picking them. So
this week it's Soffles, which are, Mark hates it when I eat on online, but these are oh, they're good. What are they?
Pizza chips.
They're really good.
Pizza chips.
Crisps.
And then this month's theme quite an exciting one. So basically, every year we have a partnership with London Craft Beer Festival, and we run a competition called Raise the Bar. So these are four very new hot craft breweries that have won that competition. We've got one from Edinburgh, who are called Vault City, and they're quite into like sour beers, some slightly funky flavors. So they've got a dry hopped farmhouse ale, which I particularly like. And then we've got a brewery called Mothership, and they are an all-female brewing team, and they've got a Brut Pale Ale, which is like a very dry style of pale ale, so it's fermented with champagne yeast. That's a delicious one. And then we also have from Dig Brew Co., we've got a pale ale from them, and there's also, if you're into darker beers, Stout at 5.4%. And finally, there's a brewery called Turning Point. The founder of this Dig Brew Co. is kind of like an artist and puts on all kinds of like art installations and things at the brewery. Comes up with these great, you know, really simple designs. So they're kind of standing out for that. And then from Turning Point, we've got a cookies and cream stout.
Which one are we tasting?
So,
this one's unusual, this one.
Cookies and cream.
Okay. Mark, you need to come up here so we can actually hear you, because you're our beer correspondent. So if I pour a bit for each of us, is that good? And we can try this. It's a beautiful can, and it's got cookies and cream on it.
We find that these kind of sweet styles of stouts are really popular with our members.
Okay, so
cheers.
Cheers. Right, let's try this. So it's 5%.
Oh,
that's really lovely,
that is,
isn't it?
Delicious.
It's kind of that's really, so it's a stout, and so it's dark, you know, Guinnessy looking beer, but it's got that really
It's not really sweet though, is it?
No, what is that?
That's beer and a pudding.
Do you know what?
Vanilla.
Do you know what it does? It tickles your tongue.
That's amazing.
It does,
as I was saying before.
Do you like that one? If people want to order them, like you then get people, say we go, I love that, I need to buy 100 cans of that.
Yeah.
100, can they?
So yeah, basically every month as part of your membership, you get some reward points, and then you can use those to kind of redeem in the online shop. You can also spend money in there as well. And we've got all the beers that have recently been featured. So if you find one that you really like, you can, you know, come online and
how hard is that though for a stock taking point of view? Because you've got to have the stock there, have you?
Yeah, like we do usually keep, you know, a few cases of all of them for you know, people to buy online afterwards. But once they're gone, they're gone. And, you know, all these beers were brewed exclusively for us. So, you know, you won't find them anywhere else. They're all kind of limited batches. So, yeah, if you do find one that you like, you know, you'll need to act fast.
Have you got good at realizing what people love most and which ones sell the best?
Yeah, so basically everybody gets points for reviewing and rating their beers that they've had. And, you know, that gives us like thousands and thousands of reviews about every single beer that we send out. So we can see trends about what people are liking. You know, we discover that there are particular styles that are more popular than others. Probably the most popular styles are like double IPAs, so, you know, big, hoppy, juicy 8-7% IPAs, New England IPAs, we're always kind of tuned into that data and tweaking what we're doing based on it.
Fraser, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks
on the podcast.
Me.
Beer52, BEER52, thenumber.com/Lovejoy if you'd like to try this subscription service. And I love the way Mark was looking at the can there. like you used to get an album cover years ago, and just because you like it so much, you just keep looking. And Mark was just doing that with this beer, so that's fantastic. Fraser, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So that was Fraser. I do like spending time with him.
What a nice guy. What an interesting story. What an interesting job.
I could speak to him for hours. Yeah. I tell you, we've only skimmed the surface there of his knowledge. Whenever you sit down with him, I get so inspired. He's such a great guy. And also the supplier of beer, which is always nice. Hey, listen, we've overrun now on this podcast.
We were going to keep
the chat about
20
shorter.
Minutes. We're doing chats for about 20 minutes.
But he's great. And I just thought everything he said was interesting. So we will do part two of this mailbag. But can I just say this podcast is sponsored by Cooker. Spelt quicker, pronounced cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It does cold water. It does normal filtered water. It does filtered sparkling water, and it does 100 degree hot water straight from your kitchen tap. I love it. Best thing in my kitchen. Apart from Mark, who's sitting there looking lovely.
Don't sponsor the podcast.
That's it from this week's podcast. Please contact us if you can, dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at Tim Lovejoy. I'm on Instagram, official Tim Lovejoy. People keep contacting me on there as well, so you can get to me on there if you want to. Have you got something to say? I was looking. I thought you were doing that like head shake thing, like you wanted to say something before we ended the podcast, but he doesn't. So we will see you in part two, which will be next week. See ya.
Bye.
Peace and love, Joy.
No, bye, bye, bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.